You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus, and today I'm teaming up with former NFL scout Matt Williamson. He hosts the Locked On NFL podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And so together, we're going to touch on some of the big picture topics of this Bears offseason in general before we go a little bit more in-depth on some free agent offensive linemen, some pass rushers, and we'll also touch on the draft a little bit at both of those positions. But before we get to Matt, we need to talk briefly here about the big Bears news of the week. Of course, on Tuesday, the Bears officially placed the transition tag on cornerback Kyle Fuller. I wrote about this a little bit more in depth over at bearswire.com where I write, so if you want more on exactly how this all plays out and what it's going to mean, I definitely recommend you go check that out over there. But let's just be mindful here of the difference between the transition tag and the non-exclusive franchise tag and the franchise tag. So there's three different kinds of tags the Bears could have used on Kyle Fuller, and they opted for what is essentially the lowest tier of the three. So the exclusive franchise tag is sort of the one everyone knows and associates. It is a one-year fully guaranteed contract that the team places on a player, and the player has no ability to negotiate with other teams. He is locked into that, you know, usually, you know, it's set by the salary cap for how much it's going to cost that player by position. But the player is locked into that contract for that 1 year unless they can come to a long-term agreement with that team. But the exclusive franchise tag completely locks that player into that team no matter what, unless, you know, of course they want to trade him or something like that. So that's the exclusive franchise tag. The non-exclusive franchise tag is similar, same price tag, but with the non-exclusive tag, the player is free to negotiate a contract with other teams as though he is a free agent. And if another team signs the player who is tagged on a non-exclusive franchise tag, then the new team owes the player's old team two first-round picks as compensation. So it's similar to, you know, like being a restricted free agent, but there's some extra compensation involved. So it's very rare that you see someone on a non-exclusive franchise tag sign elsewhere and have that other team pay the two first-round pick price to get that player. But the third one, which the Bears used for Kyle Fuller, is the transition tag, and it's sort of the lightest of the three. It's similar in the sense that it's a one-year deal that will be fully guaranteed if the player is going to play on it. But it is similarly like restricted free agency. Kyle Fuller is free to negotiate with other teams on the open market and find another contract on another team that he would be interested in playing for. And if the Bears do not match the contract offer from another team, they don't receive any compensation. So it's a very limited compensation or limited safety for the Bears. It purely gives them the right to match a contract offer. The main difference and the main reason why they use the transition tag instead of the non-exclusive franchise tag is because the transition tag is cheaper. With the transition tag, Fuller is set to make roughly $12.97 million in 2018. And the franchise tag was up more at 14.97, so about a $2 million difference. So you're looking at Fuller basically as a restricted free agent with no compensation. The non-exclusive tag would have made him a restricted free agent with compensation. And of course, the exclusive franchise tag takes the player off of the open market entirely. Using the transition tag specifically on Kyle Fuller tells me that the Bears aren't as confident that a long-term deal is going to get done between both sides here. You know, you use the transition tag because it's cheaper than the franchise tag, but it's only cheaper if you don't get that long-term deal done. You know, if you think, you know, if you go into this confident that we are going to agree on a long-term deal with this player, then why wouldn't you just use either the exclusive franchise tag and take him completely off the market, or use the non-exclusive franchise tag and let him search the market if he wants to, and potentially looking at two first-round picks if another team rarely would be interested in signing your player. You know, the Bears have said, you know, and Ryan Pace has said, they want to come to a long-term deal with Kyle Fuller, but it seems clear that they have very different dollar amounts and contracts in mind than Kyle Fuller and his party might have. So they use the transition tag on Fuller. Let them see what the open market's going to bring. You know, if another team wants to break the bank on Kyle Fuller, I think we could see the Bears opt to let him go and not match. Otherwise, why wouldn't they have just given him a big contract that he's looking for anyway? Why would you let him search that out on the market? You know, if the offers come in low, you know, or they don't come in concrete form at all, then maybe the Bears can try and get him back at more their own price that they were interested in. But again, if there's no formal offers and no deal between the Bears and Fuller, it's a little bit cheaper and easier to live with him on that one-year deal on the transition tag for $13 million instead of the franchise tag for $15. We'll see how it plays out here, but for me, it is far from a lock that Kyle Fuller is back in 2018 and beyond. If he is back for 2018, I feel like it's unlikely that a long-term deal is reached at this point unless the Bears match another team's long-term deal. But if another team comes willing to pay a lot of money, I think we could still see Fuller easily playing somewhere else this year, and the Bears still left needing two new starting cornerbacks. You know, this transition tag doesn't make cornerback not a major need. And, you know, we talked about some potential free agent options back on the February 21st episode of Locked On Bears here. We had Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report join the show. He charts NFL cornerbacks and gets all their coverage numbers for himself, and he went through a lot of that for Fuller, Amukamara, and some guys on the free agent market that could be good replacements for both. If you haven't listened to that, go back. It was a great episode with some great analysis from him that I don't think you can quite find anywhere else. Of course, a lot of the stuff he talked about is available for purchase in his cornerback guide coming out here soon, but it's all free when you tune into Locked On Bears. But enough about Kyle Fuller. Let's move on here to my conversation with Matt Williamson. We're taking a big picture look at this Bears offseason before we focus in a little bit more on the offensive line and outside linebacker positions and needs. We kind of did this as a crossover conversation, a back and forth that went on Locked On NFL, and now it's coming to you on Locked On Bears. Just a fun little discussion between a couple of guys passionate about football, and of course, it's talking about the Bears.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I'm Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL podcast. I just got back from Indy yesterday, but the host of Locked On Bears, Lauren Cox, reached out to me yesterday and wanted to chat. So we are doing a combined Locked On Bears, Locked On NFL extravaganza here. Why don't you just steer the ship, man? Let's talk Bears or free agency or Bears fits. I mean, they're a really, let me just give you my overview real quick, and then I'll hand it over to you to run the show. They're a really interesting team to me because I think the head coaching hire, I'm not going to say it's going to have McVay Rams-like effect, but if anyone does, it's this one. And I think the Nagy-Trubisky marriage like McVay and Goff could really pay dividends for a long time. They have some pieces in place. They've made some, you know, some cuts. I think they're going to be active in free agency. Absolutely to me, and I don't know if you agree or not, but I think they'll look for a corner. I think they'll look for an inside linebacker. I think that the number one need far and away, though, is receiving help, tight end, but especially wide receivers. And I think it's real interesting about the Jordan Howard for Jarvis Landry rumors we've been hearing, too. I think we should address those.
Yeah, the one thing we know about the Bears general manager is that he's not going to go into the NFL draft with any huge, you know, obvious holes on the roster that you feel right. Like he has to address with a certain pick. You know, he's going to put bodies at every position with major holes in it and at least give some kind of backup plan in case they get to the draft and aren't able to draft, you know, the wide receiver that they want or the cornerback that they want. So definitely going to see them be active at cornerback with both Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara being free agents, and certainly their wide receiver core is almost empty. They just moved on from Jarrell Freeman at inside linebacker. They moved on from a pair of pass rushers, so they're going to need help on the edge. And then they declined Josh Sitton's contract on the offensive line, let him hit the free agent market, and all of a sudden they need a new starting left guard and could just generally use some more depth up on the offensive line. Got to keep Mitchell Trubisky protected here. That'll be key towards having that Sean McVay-like success in year one.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and something I've told my listeners really the last 13 years while I've been doing this, that I really commend GMs that use free agency exactly like you said, that to the best of their abilities can take the best guy available, especially in the first round. And the Bears, it would be a crime if they had to pass on Quentin Nelson or maybe one of these top two linebackers that are really versatile, Edmonds or Smith or somebody like that, or their favorite corner. I don't think there's a receiver that you're doing jumping jacks there for where they're picking, but maybe they trade down, add more picks. So I think they have a lot of cards in their hand to get better.
Yeah, that seems to be, you know, how they like to do this. You know, they don't want to be hamstrung to one pick at that spot. You know, Ryan Pace likes to take these athletic, you know, high upside, sometimes questionable floor, but high upside players. You know, Leonard Floyd and Kevin White in his first two drafts, I guess other way around there, before Mitchell Trubisky last year. And then, like, he waits till the later rounds to kind of, you know, hit the more solid but lower ceiling, you know, reliable players more at positions of needs and kind of fill in the cracks that way. But yeah, his free agency pattern has been to fill these needs. And unfortunately for him, he's had a lot of struggles with finding the right guys to actually do that. You know, you can, when you get through free agency, maybe you start to get excited about the guys that he has brought in. But once you get to the regular season, you know, Mike Glennon, you know, flames out. Deion Sims, a tight end, didn't really have the year they were hoping for. And even, you know, injuries have come up with Pernell McPhee and Danny Trevathan and even Jarrell Freeman and his suspensions. Even the guys that you think look the most solid end up having that kind of injury limitation and backfiring a little bit in that sense. So I think a lot of Bears fans are going into free agency here skeptical just a little bit about Ryan Pace, excited about the opportunities that he has to add players, but they're still kind of waiting for him to have that really strong, full free agent class.
Well said. I've mentioned this before. 2 years ago, the Bears were the most injured team in the league. Last year, they were pretty darn injured. They weren't number one on the list, but also had a brutal, brutal schedule, you know, so, and a rookie quarterback and a lot of changes. So I'm not excusing them, but they've had some things go against them that are outside their control these past 2 years. I said I was going to hand it over to you, but I got a couple questions for you
first.
Go
for it.
Bringing in a Chiefs offensive coordinator. I love Shaheen, and I do some, you know, some fantasy stuff, some dynasty stuff. I'm telling everyone to pick him up. And I'm not saying he's going to be Travis Kelce. I mean, Kelce's one of the top two tight ends in the league. But I think his role is ready to grow exponentially. True or false?
It still remains to be seen. I think they want him to, but mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how much you're going to see. I mean, he has some of that profile, but I think when they drafted him with John Fox, they were sort of intending to build him to be more of an inline tight end and be less of that motion around slot weapon. And, you know, he's never had quite the dynamic speed and separation ability as a route runner just yet, but he's also a very raw prospect. And so I think, you know, we still need to see exactly how they handle the Deion Sims situation. There was some talk that they could try and release him, and there's been some talk that, you know, they could be linked to, like, Trey Burton to try and come in and be that Zach Miller pass-catching type tight end while they still let Shaheen come along here. It was hard to get a feel for his rookie year just because John Fox was very insistent on a particular type of role for him, a lot of blocking early in his career to try and establish him a little bit that way, and certainly the offensive coordinator was much more vanilla than Matt Nagy. So if there's ever a situation for Shaheen to take that next step and have a big second season, it's this one. But I'm unsure at this point if he's ready for that in year two, or if he might need another year sort of in this secondary role to Deion Sims. You know, maybe Shaheen becomes that red zone guy, gets a lot of touchdowns, and maybe only 400 or 500 yards, doesn't become that starting level tight end, but then year three gets handed the keys a little bit here and grows in that way.
Again, really well said. A different coaching staff certainly drafted him with different intentions in mind. I'm a big fan of his talent, though, and think he might adjust. Maybe drop 5-10 pounds would be a terrible idea. If they go out and sign a Trey Burton, though, I think that'll tell us all they need to know, or use a second-round pick on a movement-type tight end. The other guy I want to mention, or two other ones I want to mention, Josh Sitton. I didn't see this coming, and I really thought the interior of their offensive line, I know you want to talk offensive line extensively here in a little bit, was really the strength of the team, and now I don't know that it is.
Yeah, the Josh Sitton thing, it feels to me like there's something else going on here that we don't get to know from the outside. And there's been sort of some weirdness with how he's been covered in the Chicago media. Like the ESPN reporter for Chicago has always been like exceptionally negative about Josh Sitton and claiming that he's not been in shape fully and maybe inaccurately talking about how he's played. He was critical of the level of play. I thought he still played at pretty much a Pro Bowl level, but maybe he is a little bit less, you know, stable in terms of durability than it appears. You know, he hasn't missed a ton of games, but they could have concerns about his knees maybe winding down. And if he isn't in phenomenal shape, that can be a red flag for a team, you know, when you have an offensive lineman getting on the wrong side of 30. But it does seem like a little bit of still a head scratcher. It feels like maybe there's some disconnect with the front office or the coaching staff and what they want from Josh Sitton. And it could also just be looking at this free agent market. There are a lot of starting quality guards set to hit the market. One of them is from the Kansas City Chiefs, Zach Fulton. He was a starting guard and center for Matt Nagy in Kansas City. You know, there's already talk that Albert Wilson has this connection to the Bears that he's already, you know.
I've heard that's a done deal.
Yeah, that's already a done deal. So maybe the same thing could be said for their offensive linemen. If Matt Nagy already talked to Fulton before he left and said, hey, come to Chicago, and they sort of have this handshake agreement, maybe the Bears feel more confident saying, okay, we can let Josh Sitton go, use that same amount of money to go get a new starting guard that's 5 years younger.
Yeah, and maybe even cheaper in the long run. And as you were sitting there talking, it just kind of dawned on me, I had the same conversation with myself 1 year ago with the Packers. You know, like, why did they cut Josh Sitton? You know, that blew me away when it happened. Didn't see it coming. When you see it back-to-back, maybe it has more to do with the player than the team. And maybe we just don't know those answers. You know, we're not privy to all those things. Maybe it's a medical staff throwing their two cents in. And because we had you on, I just want to address the rumors, the Landry-Howard trade. I don't know if it'll happen or not. What we're hearing around the league is the Ravens and Bears are most interested in Landry. And I think both those quarterbacks could really use a safety blanket, type of guy like Landry. Although I think Albert Wilson would fill that role to some degree too. But the more I thought about it, the more I could see an Andy Reid Chiefs type offense not loving Howard. And I really like Howard. Zone runner, downhill, efficient, professional, starting, strong guy, but just doesn't offer enough in the passing game.
Yeah, it's a trade rumor that I think Ian Rappaport eventually kind of denied it from the team's standpoint. And
yeah, there might be no truth to it.
And I think it rustled a lot of feathers of Bears fans. I definitely see the background to it and kind of see where it's coming from with, you know, the whole idea of how he fits into this Kansas City offense. But at the same time, you know, one of the big things both Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace have preached all offseason when they've talked about how things are going to be different in the future. Nagy over and over keeps talking about how, you know, we're going to identify the players on our team and put them in the best position to be successful, take best advantage of their strengths, and try and minimize their weaknesses. And so I think as much as they would ideally like an every down back that can do everything in the passing game and the running game, I feel like they recognize the value that Jordan Howard provides. And I think they'd be more inclined to keep him and just add other running backs to the rotation with Tariq Cohen rather than completely giving up on, you know, a 1,000-yard rusher every year just because he might not necessarily fit exactly what you would want in the passing game.
No, I mean, I understand that. Making moves just to make moves is not good business. That's about all I had for you. Do you want to shoot a few things my way?
Yeah, let's dive in a little bit here to this free agent offensive line group because, you know, we talked about maybe being more going on with Josh Sitton. We talked about Fulton maybe being a potential candidate here. When you look at this market, it seems like Andrew Norwell is the top interior offensive lineman. Do you think he's the kind of guy that you just throw all your money at and take the Pro Bowl offensive lineman, or is that too much of the low-hanging fruit? Are there other guys that you might identify as a better value?
Yeah, I think he's going to get expensive. I don't think he's one of the very best guards in the league. I think he's a high-quality player, and he keeps getting better and better. And as is the case with all these, you know, best free agents at their position, no matter what, every year, they're going to get overpaid. I might rather have a Zeitler from last year. Not by leaps and bounds, though. And the other name, obviously, I think you need to mention is Pugh, who with the Giants, who's probably he's better at guard, but also is a high-quality right tackle that if you get in the market for both those two and you end up with one, that would be tremendous. You had mentioned, you know, Fulton as well, and I think it's really noteworthy when you go down this road, the more draft coverage I do, the more impressed I am with this guard class. I think it's a really good guard class that the Bears might be best suited. Fulton at a pretty good price, like you mentioned, and then use a second-round pick on a guy.
Yeah, I could easily see, you know, Will Hernandez from UTEP if he's still there. Definitely a guy that – and a really deep class, like you said, that you can get starting quality guys maybe even into the third round depending on how things shake out in day two, or maybe you move down in the first round and pick up later picks. And there's different ways to be able to do it. I agree that we're going to see some sort of starting quality guard brought in to at least – cover that with a Band-Aid at worst to give them that flexibility. Because, you know, like we said, I don't think Ryan Pace is going to go into the draft saying, I'm going to draft a guard. But if you're sitting there at 8 and Quentin Nelson falls down and he's the best player on their board, he's going to take him. So I definitely agree with what you're saying there. But I also look at this free agent class and it seems like there's a lot of guys here that just are serviceable starting offensive linemen that are never going to be great, but aren't going to give you too many terrible games. You know, there's guys like Josh Klein from the Titans and even, you know, Evan Smith from the Buccaneers. Brandon Fusco went on to the 49ers from the Vikings and had a solid year. I mean, how much, or I guess what quality of player, you know, do you invest in at this guard position knowing that you might get one in the draft? I mean, how much would you spend? How important is it to lock that down now in free agency as opposed to taking your chances in the draft?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the more I think about it from a Bears perspective, I wouldn't be, and I usually don't take the stance, I wouldn't be overly critical either way. I mean, I think you absolutely need to add a veteran. But if they went all in on a Norwell or a Pugh, I would say, okay, you know, you want to make Trubisky's life as easy as possible. You want to have an interior run game. You don't want a weakness of the team to become a strength. So I'm all on board with that. Or if you did what I said, which in most cases I think is the more economical approach and the smarter approach, is give me a Fulton or a Fusco. I thought that was a good name you brought up too, that won't be overly expensive. And then use a second or third round pick on a guard. That's probably using your resources better and staying young there while having a bridge guy and giving you depth. So either would work in this case. But if you end up getting a Norwell or something, and that means you don't get a receiver or a corner or a more pressing need that's harder to find, then I'd be critical.
It seems like this free agent class has a handful of guys that fall under this reclamation project, you know, category here. Some former first round picks that have gone on to different teams and still haven't had quite the success that you would have wanted to see with where they were drafted, but you also aren't ready to give up on the potential that they might still have. I mean, there's Luke Jokel from the formerly of the Jaguars who went to Seattle last year, DJ Fluker, first round pick for the Chargers who played for the Giants last year, Greg Robinson from the Rams played for the Lions last year. You know, out of those guys, and even Jonathan Cooper from the Cardinals to the Browns and Cowboys, are there any of those guys that you would consider taking a flyer on and maybe have a chance to get a starting role out of them, or are you pretty sour on the way they've all come around?
They've been rough. I mean, there's no doubt. But, I mean, this is a big Belichick move, especially later in people's careers. Bring in the former first-round pick, especially if you had good college grades on him, and you watch his career and say, okay, I can understand these roadblocks, coaching changes, injuries, maybe a lack of maturity, and they grow up after a while. So generally speaking, I'm great with take a flyer on Greg Robinson, as long as you don't put yourself in a situation where if he doesn't even make your opening day roster, it doesn't hurt you, because these guys have struggled to even make teams. The name you mentioned, I think, that kind of piqued my interest the most was Cooper. I thought he got better with the Cowboys as the season went on and the more he played, but he was also surrounded by Pro Bowl guys. Especially this position, though, that a lot of guys, and you mentioned a lot of them just right now, are just so overdrafted on combine numbers and things like that, but they were never all that good to begin with.
Is there anyone in this draft class that you fear could be, you know, susceptible to falling to the same thing, that gets overdrafted on athleticism and combine numbers rather than tape and consistent technique?
Oh, yeah, and it happens every year, and you can understand why. I mean, there's such a shortage of incoming quality offensive linemen that you kind of have to manufacture them. And, you know, scouts go into the schools and – you know, they don't put great grades on these guys, but they give them good athleticism scores. And then what people don't realize is when the season's over, whenever your last game is, the coaches start to get involved in the process. And offensive line coaches are notorious, as are all positions, but especially offensive line coaches, that they watch Brian O'Neill from my hometown here, Pitt, and he's just running and athletic and a former tight end, but doesn't block all that well. You know, I mean, even the Senior Bowl really got exposed. But those coaches look at him and say, wow, give me 2 years and I'll turn him into a star. I'm a great coach, and maybe they're even right. And I can mold that clay. But more often than not, it doesn't work out that way. I mean, I say this a lot on the air, and one of the things I learned the most in the NFL, and this is a Ravens way of thinking, it's been highly successful, and many around the league feel this way at the offensive line position, that if you're the baseline in terms of athleticism, you have to have some. You can't just be me or you. You know, I mean, you got to be an athlete. But if you have a lot, or, you know, high grades in smarts and toughness, you're really hard to get off the field nowadays. You know who to block. You're a tough guy, you fight to the whistle, and you have enough athletic ability. And some of those, you know, free agent guards you mentioned, I think meet that criteria, Klein, guys like that. They're not special, but they'll probably play a long time and retire with a lot of millions in the bank because they're really hard to get off the field.
And it seems like, you know, changing paths a little bit here, it seems like you can say a lot of similar things about, you know, outside linebacker, edge rusher position. You know, they talk about, you know, building a team, you want guys that can protect your quarterback and get after the quarterback and obviously the quarterback. And it seems like you see the similar thing in the draft, where the more athletic freaks tend to be the ones that rise, and then sometimes you have them not really pan out the way you would have wanted. I think of, you know, Deion Jordan is a big one, but even guys like Bud Dupree don't quite have the NFL career, I guess, the production so far that you would have wanted to see out of these, you know, decently high first round picks. So when you look at this, you know, free agent group, you start to get here now that you're losing those athletic guys. You're not seeing as many of them hit the market, and it feels like it's not a very deep free agent group, but there's still, you know, some talent out there with some question marks. You know, I look to Adrian Claiborne from the Atlanta Falcons. You know, his sack numbers got a little bit inflated with that 6-sack game against the backup Cowboys left tackle that he just dominated, but that doesn't mean he wasn't still a very good pass rusher in the rest of his, you know, in his season. What's your take on what Claiborne was able to do this year and sort of how his career has changed to becoming this sort of 10-sack edge rush guy?
Yeah, and I will say, and I was on Baltimore radio not long ago, and I told them, I know this isn't what you asked me, but this isn't exactly the best year to be needy at the receiving positions, tight end and wide receiver, when you mix the draft and especially free agency. And I think that's equally true at edge, you know, in terms of finding. Yeah, I mean, it's just not a great – I mean, those guys are always at a premium anyway, but this is not a great year to need one, unfortunately, for the Bears because they need all those things I just mentioned. As for Claiborne, I think he's very safe. You know, that I think he, wherever he signs, I think he's pretty scheme versatile, that he won't hurt you. I mean, I think he'll be a quality, ideally number three, but more likely number two defensive end. But in today's market, you probably need to pay him a couple million more a year than you want to, you know, I mean, for that, for what he brings. But I don't think he's going to embarrass himself or bust out or anything like that. I think he's a high-quality player, not a difference maker.
It seems like for edge rushers, a lot of teams are going to end up kind of having to bargain bin shop a little bit, maybe take some chances on a guy that is unproven or has question marks that just aren't – because there aren't guys that don't lack those question marks. And I think people are starting to draw some connections between the Bears and Aaron Lynch because Vic Fangio coached him in San Francisco.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what Lynch offers as a pass rusher? And I know, like, they tried to move him to, like, 4-3 defensive end, put a hand in the dirt and bulk up a little bit. And I think he struggled a little bit with that transition. But would you think the reunion with Fangio could be what the doctor ordered? Or do you have more serious question marks about what he can still do as an NFL player?
See, I like that. I mean, especially because I got a lot of faith in Fangio and the, you know, the obvious acquaintance between the two, I think, is really important there. You mentioned his weight. I think he can get too heavy and too sluggish. I don't know if the team asked that of him or they asked it of him and he put on too much or whatever. I do think he's better 250, 255, stand-up guy. I would be into that. I mean, obviously, you're not going to spend a ton for that. He also has some off-the-field concerns that you can't ignore. But there's ability there, and if anyone can get it back out of him, I think Fangio would be a good one.
Similar situation out of San Francisco, Cornelius Tank Carradine, high draft pick. Fangio, I think, started him at outside linebacker when he was still there. Then they had him, like, bulk up.
And I never understood that.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you think, you know, if the Bears wanted to bring Carradine back, would you put him at five technique defensive end, or do you stand him up again on the edge? Where do you see his fit?
I see his fit, and fits matter less now than ever because everybody's always in nickel and all these things. But whenever they made him an outside linebacker, I immediately raised an eyebrow and thought, he's at his best at 270 pounds, being a very poor man's Michael Bennett to me. You know, like, it may be a strong side defensive end and then kick inside and give you some pass rush. Maybe not all that dissimilar than Bullard, now I think about it.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison there, although I think Bears fans would be hoping that a second-round pick like Carradine can get more out of him, yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather have Bullard.
Yeah, and Bullard, what are your thoughts on the way Bullard has played while we're on him? It seems like he hasn't – I mean, you see these flashes like we saw at Florida, and maybe he struggled a little bit with transitioning from a guy that jumps the snap to being a guy that can win more consistently with technique. But we see these flashes, but now we're in, what, year three for the third-round pick? I mean, do you typically see guys put it together this late, or are you concerned about him, you know, running out of time as far as the leash goes?
Yeah, and you kind of summed it up the way I was about to in that.
Sorry.
No, it's cool. I mean, I liked him a lot coming out of school. I do feel like this is sort of a make it or break it year, and I lean towards that he'll make it. But when they picked him, I went, ooh, that's not what they want. You know, that's not what they – it's not a very good fit for him. He needs to be a penetrator. I'd like to see him in Atlanta. You know, I mean, just pin your ears back in the dome and go get him. Or, you know, the Colts when they had Peyton Manning and, you know, those type of deals. I don't want him slow playing technique all that much. I mean, so I don't think the fit has been wonderful for him. And I wonder – you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, and he's a free agent when I'm having this conversation with Locked On Falcons or something about, well, maybe a new home will do him good.
We talked about the offensive line draft class, so let's hit the edge rusher draft class here. Are you locked into Bradley Chubb as the number one guy in this class? I think people are starting to get there after the combine, but I've seen a few people maybe push back on that a little bit. You know, some Harold Landry fans from his 2016 tape. Some people are big on Arden Key's athletic ability from LSU. Where do you stand at the top of the edge rusher group?
Yeah, it's still Chubb to me, but I don't think he's Myles Garrett, Joey Bosa, you know, I'm Khalil Mack. You know, I mean, like, as best edge rushers go from a draft class, he wouldn't be real high on my list. I still think he's a quality player. I don't expect him to be a bust, anything like that. I think he'll go really high because of the position he plays. But I also think he benefits from not having a lot of competition for that top spot. I mean, if Bosa was coming out, I'll take Bosa all day long. You know what I mean? Landry is intriguing, and he's intriguing to put opposite Floyd, too, because I do believe that – I believe more the 2016 version of Landry than the 2017 version. I don't know that I'd take him where the Bears are picking, but if you move back a handful of spots, add another pick, maybe that would be a good fit. Arden Key, crazy talented, got extremely heavy, and is now down in the 230s. It's all about what's he doing off the field, though. You know, I mean, I can't answer those questions. Your scouts, you know, those guys would have to be on top of it. But maybe as a flyer in the second or third round, I mean, he could be a huge, huge home run. I think he might be. I think he's the most talented of all those guys.
Do you see a little bit of Leonard Floyd in him or even in Lorenzo Carter, Floyd's teammate from Georgia? I mean, are those similar types of builder? Or where are the differences there?
Carter, to me, is more athlete than football player at this point, which isn't a huge knock on him. I mean, the right guy might be able to develop him, and you got to see how much he loves the game and all those wonderful things. But I think he's going to take a little time. I do think that they're – who did you say? Key was the other one?
Yeah, you know, lighter, speedy edge rushers.
Yeah, I mean, thin-waisted guys, athletes, real good change of direction and bend – unfortunately, more finesse than they are power, and I do think that's kind of where Floyd is, too. I also think it's somewhat of a make-it-or-break-it year for him, too. You know, I mean, I really loved him, but he needs to play with a little more of an edge and a little more sand in his pants.
Yeah, let's touch on Floyd a little bit here. I mean, we wanted to see him take that next step, and, you know, a lot of times in his career, he's been able to get after the quarterback and sometimes clean up what other pass rushers or what, you know, a push from the interior flushes the quarterback out of the pocket. And then Floyd just uses his insane athletic ability to get after him and get to the quarterback. And, you know, other times he can just beat the guy off the snap. And you know, we're seeing technique slowly integrate more into his repertoire and put more pass rush moves together. But what does a successful next step in 2018 for Leonard Floyd look like to you?
Just like you said, he needs to continue the technical side of things. He has all the gifts in the world. I think he needs to play through players as opposed to around them a little bit more. And we're seeing glimpses of it, and some injuries have held him back here and there too. Yes, I mean, I think that he just needs to realize that, yeah, maybe I am better athlete than that tackle, but this tackle's 30 years old with three kids at home, and he's been doing this a long time. And you know, knows what the heck he's doing, that I can't just run around him. I mean, you see very few sacks in the NFL nowadays of just, I'm just going to speed rush you and just beat you to the edge, because they're going to make him go to the inside. They're going to make him counter. The book on him, if you're an opposing tackle, you fear his athleticism and his change of direction, but you also know how to play him too at this point.
Well, that's about all I have for edge rushers and offensive line. Is there anything else Chicago Bears you want to touch on before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I mean, I do think it's an interesting team. I'm kind of buying stock in Trubisky right now, like I said, in sort of a Goff-like fashion. Had his ups and downs, but they're going to go as he goes. I mean, that's not late-breaking news.
Yeah, they're going to be big spenders next week in free agency, so yeah. There'll be plenty more Chicago Bears to get into here in the coming days and weeks.
One more name, I'm sorry.
Oh, go for it.
A free agent I think is a little bit underrated, that I think that would behoove them to keep him at the right price now before he hits the open market, is Dontrell Inman. I think Inman's a quality NFL wide receiver. Is he a superstar? Absolutely not. But considering the state of their wide receivers, I'd like to see them lock him up this minute.
Yeah, on my Tuesday podcast, I had Matt Harmon from NFL.com to break down the wide receivers, and we talked a little bit about Inman. And he was a guy that I felt like wasn't properly used last year in Chicago. You know, when he first got there, they started taking a couple more shots deep with him. They hit him on some slants and a couple of plays just to get the ball in his hands. But after, you know, a big Green Bay game in his first game and a couple of different games where they fed him some targets, it kind of dropped off. And they switched to, and they seemed to be using him more like a little bit more horizontally than they should. You know, a lot of deep digs and some comeback routes and just a few things that aren't necessarily as big in his game. You know, you need to see more of the curls and the deep shots, and he can be that vertical receiver for your offense. Problem is, the Bears were a very horizontal offense last year. I'm with you 100%. I think you can get that 800-yard guy that he was with the Chargers if you use him in the right way. I don't think the Bears used him in the right way. I'd sign him back on a cheap one-year deal, a prove-it deal, and let Matt Nagy put him in position and get a lot more bang for your buck.
Yeah, I think he's a route runner. I think he's a technician who has some size but doesn't need to go deep all the time. I mean, you can throw him outs and, like you said, comebacks and things like that. Yeah, I'm with you. Maybe even a two-year deal at a pretty reasonable rate.
Yeah, again, when you're looking at this free agent group, it's not like there's five guys out there that are bona fide number one wide receivers that you can go out and spend. So Inman has that number two receiver potential. You pair him with Cameron Meredith again and Albert Wilson, and maybe you draft a guy in the second or third round, you know, Michael Gallup, Christian Kirk, somebody. All of a sudden you have four wide receivers there that are all capable of 600, 700, 800 yards. That's not a bad wide receiver core, plus your tight ends, and you got Tariq Cohen out of the backfield. I think Matt Nagy could do something with that.
Yeah, and I think you're then building something, and, you know, you don't have your Calvin Johnson or, you know, Andre Johnson guy, but they don't grow on trees, and maybe that's next year's job.
Yeah, or even you find somebody in the NFL draft, you know, somebody that can be, you know, Marcel Aitman from Oklahoma State has that size, or, you know, you can get some speed from somebody like DJ Moore. I mean, I feel like that the draft is where you try and find that guy that could maybe be more than just, you know, a number two receiver that has that potential for number one, and use free agency to just kind of get the solid guy that can get you your yards consistently and maybe not necessarily be the most dynamic playmaker.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And with all respect to Kelce and Hill, they really didn't have a prototypical number one wideout in Kansas City and haven't for a very long time. It sure would be nice to have a burner like Hill, though, too, in the mix somewhere. Just someone that can fly.
Yeah, and maybe Tariq Cohen can be that. I mean, Nagy was asked about that.
Maybe.
Tried not to. He kind of said, yeah, they're both athletic and small, but they are different players, and we're gonna find the way to get Tariq Cohen the ball, but maybe a little bit less vertically than Hill. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you take Cohen, line him outside the numbers, and run go routes all day with him. But I think that he's a very dynamic player, and his role should be a major part of the offense. But Hill's the scariest guy in the league outside the numbers.
Scarier than Antonio Brown?
As a pure deep threat, yes.
Between the numbers, yeah, I suppose.
I mean, just on go routes and just scare you with speed, to me, Hill's number one.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And we'll see what Nagy's able to recreate that way in Chicago, if they get someone with that kind of speed, or if it's a very different-looking Bears offense than we saw in Kansas City. He said at the Combine, you know, they was asked many times what he thinks the Bears offense is going to look like. He said, we're going to make our own identity. We are going to be the Chicago Bears offense. We're not going to be the Kansas City Chiefs offense.
And
Mark Helfrich, the offensive coordinator, is from Oregon. We're going to see mixes of that, maybe some tempo, maybe some different looking formations there. Obviously more RPOs and quick passes, and hopefully all with the goal of just making Mitchell Trubisky's job a lot easier.
That's the whole goal. I mean, that's all that matters is acclimate him quickly, make him comfortable. I keep going back to Goff, you know, and absolutely should install, as the Chiefs did, and as the Chiefs will keep up with, a lot of college principals.
Yeah, it'll be curious to track the development here of Mitchell Trubisky versus Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. You know, I think a lot of Bears fans were initially kind of doing Watson Trubisky because he was more the top quarterback in the draft that a lot of people were interested in. And I believe Watson was the next one taken after Trubisky. But with the Chiefs and Nagy now here developing Trubisky versus his own quarterback that he drafted, I think that's going to be a fun rivalry sort of to monitor here moving forward.
Yeah, it's well said. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think you're dead on.
All right, Matt. Well, it's been a pleasure talking Bears and just general free agency draft with you. We'll have to do this again here coming up in the offseason.
Yeah, this is a blast. Let's definitely do it again.
Thanks again to Matt Williamson for joining us on today's show. If you like what you heard, enjoyed that conversation, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and just keep tuning back in because we're going to keep bringing in more great guests like Mr. Williamson. You know, free agency gets rolling next week. Locked On Bears is going to be your number one destination for analysis, news, updates, you name it, on everyone the Bears go out and sign. We will dive in, bring you stuff straight from the tape. We'll try and get some guests maybe that are covering these players from their former teams. One way or another, we will have you covered with everything that happens in free agency. Don't forget to like Locked On Bears on Facebook and follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Bears. There's also more Bears talk every day on my Twitter at Cox Sports One. It's like Fox Sports One, but with a C. Thanks for wrapping up your week here with Locked On Bears. Bear down.